Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 94 of Boston's Best, brought to you by Condon Productions. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guest on today's podcast is Jack McNamara. Jack is the founder and CEO of True, a functional wellness and energy drink company. Jack was the cliche entrepreneur building a business while living in the back room of a gym. True's offices are now in Natick, and Jack incorporated True in 2015. True started off as an energy shot company. They saw the category being owned by 5-Hour Energy and wanted a piece of it. But they wanted a piece of it with a product that is filled with ingredients that are actually good for you. The benefits within True's drinks are centered around energy, focus, sleep, immunity, pre-workout, and others. Even though they started off as an energy shot company, when COVID hit, they focused on innovation. On top of the energy shot, they now also have tablets and 12-ounce cans. It wasn't easy, though. In this episode, we talk in depth about the early challenges Jack faced while trying to build a brand in this category. The first iteration of the flavor tasted like tree bark, he said. It takes a lot of work to build something healthy for you in the food and bev space that actually tastes good as well. And be sure to listen to the end, as Jack shares the advice he'd give someone looking to start their own business, what he would tell his 18-year-old self, and how he defines success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week we have Jack McNamara. Jack is the founder and CEO of True. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited to have you on here. It's always fun when a previous guest, Petros, comes, like, introduces me to somebody else to reach out to that he thinks would be cool to have on the podcast. And like I was telling you before we recorded, I'm big into just health and fitness and wellness and that whole space anyway. So when I had your, not gonna lie, when I had your email address, I got kind of excited because I could just, like, email you directly and try to reach out to you. So I'm excited to get into it and have you on here.
Nice.
Yeah. So before we get into True, give us a little background on yourself. Like, did you grow up in Massachusetts? Are you initially from around here?
Yeah. So I grew up 20 minutes outside of Boston in Newton. Ended up going to Belmont Hill, which is same school Petros went to. And yeah. He absolutely destroyed me on the tennis court. So that's where we met. Then I ended up going to Colgate University to play college hockey. After 2 years, I kind of had the dream of playing pro hockey. So went and played in Denmark, Slovakia, Norway. And yeah, that's kind of like my pre-entrepreneurial story. And in a nutshell, I guess that was me.
Two things. One, I randomly played tennis this morning. So it's funny you brought up tennis. I live in Framingham. So the Wayland High School, I think you're a Natick guy, right?
Our business is in
business Natick. Yeah. So I'm like 2 miles from the Wayland High School. So me and a buddy played there this morning.
Oh, that's awesome. I still play. I have three brothers and we all always play probably once a week and during the summers. And I'm probably the weakest link there. So I'm hoping for someday to move up the ranks.
Yeah, it's fun. Like my buddy of mine and I, we started playing last year, usually once a week, typically on Wednesdays. It's just kind of worked out for the two of us. And I'll go to him one day. He'll come to me 1 week. It's been fun. And then on the other side of the coin, hockey, that is the one sport that I did not grow up playing. My father stopped watching hockey. Bobby Orr was no longer on Bruins. And I just never watched hockey growing up. So I just never got into it. I'm a pretty athletic guy, but that is the worst sport. I couldn't even skate right now, if I'm being candid with you.
Damn. You're one of the few in Boston.
I know. Like baseball and basketball, I grew up in hockey. Yeah. Like, especially if you're being from Boston, I just never played hockey. Yeah.
Well, both my parents were athletes. My mom was a tennis player, hence the tennis. We were all letdowns in that arena. and then my dad played in the AHL and tried to follow his path, but we all played pro to a degree, but never at that level.
Yeah, so. No, that's pretty cool though. That's impressive. So was there an in-between from, you know, when the hockey career ended to beginning True? What was the in-between there, if there was one?
Yeah, so I only went to Colgate for 2 years. I begged my parents to let me live out the hockey dream, which they dragged their feet a little bit, but let me do it. And they said, hey, as long as you get your degree, that's fine. So yeah. I did it for a couple of years, got my degree from Boston College part-time while I played. And as soon as I hung up the skates, it ended up being a contract that fell through in Germany. And I kind of sat there and was like, I guess hockey after 24 years is over. What do I do now? And I did what any kind of young kid would do, is talk to 1,000 people and try to get a job. And the one group that gave me a chance was VM Turbo, which ended up being Turbonomic and got acquired by IBM. I played no part in that. I lasted 2 weeks and 3.5 days and 150 cold calls a day. Talking to CTOs and CIOs definitely wasn't got my blood boiling. So yeah. I applied to like 100 accelerators from California to God knows where, trying to come up with a business idea. They all said no. And eventually one said yes in New York. And before that happened, my mom was like, hey, Jack, it's like time to get another job, get married, have kids, do that. And I moved to New York like literally a week later. So that's kind of where the entrepreneurial story really began.
Got it. Got it. So was that business true?
Yeah. So it's a long story. Actually, when I was in Denmark, I applied to some sort of incubator program, and I had this idea for a mini liquor bottle because I was a hockey player, college kid. Like, what other concept are you going to think of other than one derived from liquor and fun? And had some big meetings, but the design itself ended up costing more money. So liquor companies didn't want to spend more money on their mini liquor bottles, which is a loss leader anyways for them.
Yeah.
So a business model trying to sell big corporations on a product that's actually going to lose them more money wasn't exactly the best pitch. So I had always been interested in health and wellness, and every locker room I've been in, as you've probably noticed as well, is like, whether it's peewee hockey or basketball or little league baseball, it's like Red Bull started entering our worlds at a pretty young age. And same with 5-Hour Energy, Monster, Sobe. And I looked at the labels and I was like, why are we training like 3 times a day? Yet when we get to the court or the rink, we're fueling our bodies with garbage. And I mean, the functionality was there, but the ingredient labels weren't. And that was something that I thought, okay, if someone's going to do it, what the hell, why don't I do it? And that was the naive launch. And when we moved to New York, it was me and a high school buddy. That was kind of the initial concept, just like a healthy energy shot. And it's obviously evolved from there.
Yeah. So was that the first, was the shot the first, you know, product essentially? Because I've seen, like, I went on the website, like I've seen, you know, like tablets, shots, bottles. Like, so was the shot the very first iteration of it?
Yeah, we looked at 5-Hour Energy, which was doing at the time about $1 billion a year. With massive margins, selling this product for like $3, when we knew based on our research that they were probably manufacturing these for less than 50 cents, printing money. Wow. And as a couple of 21-year-old naive guys, we're like, oh, we could do this. We could do it better. And so we launched a healthy energy shot called True Energy. And unfortunately, we went the fully natural, like perfect product route, and it tasted like tree bark. And thank God, like, friends and family still got behind us on like Kickstarter campaigns and Indiegogo. And we got a little too cute with the packaging, to the point where people didn't know if it was a tablet, a shot, a liquid, a powder. And we ended up, to be totally honest with you, making mistakes for like 5 years, but we never raised enough capital at a valuation that we wouldn't be able to exceed. So we kept being able to learn and grow the business year over year.
Yeah.
But it was never that hockey stick curve where everyone's like running to the bank. But it was one of those things where if people are going to stick with us, I think everyone's going to be happy with their return on investment. And it's not going to be 1,000x like Tesla, but it's going to be a winning story, hopefully.
Yeah. So as far as like the Indiegogo, the Kickstarter, can you explain to people that might not understand how that works? Like, if somebody's looking to start a business and they're looking to raise money, like, how exactly does that process work?
Yeah. So, I mean, the general progression for anyone getting in the startup space or wants to be an entrepreneur, it's like, you got to bootstrap the business, which is another word of saying, beg your friends and family for any money to kind of keep you alive while you either work a part-time job or you do this full-time. And for our situation, like, we were working at Equinox right off of Times Square, kind of giving us the ability to buy dinner and sleeping on couches at friends' houses and living in the office, essentially. So that's like stage one, I guess, of the entrepreneur journey, of just like survival mode.
Yeah.
And then once you have an MVP or a minimal viable product, it's like, okay, now you can start bringing those to friends and family and saying, hey, like we need $5,000 to do X.
Okay.
And those people, as long as you're honest with them and say, hey, like you're probably not going to see your money back for 5 to 7 years, or you might not ever see it again. I hope I get invited to Thanksgiving dinner. Like all the conversations I had with people, I was super honest and I don't regret that. I think it made kind of raising capital harder because I had people that said no after I had been like brutally honest about beverage being very difficult. And then the next stage beyond friends and family, which one way to do it is Indiegogo or Kickstarter, is rather than giving people a piece of the business or a loan, you give them the opportunity to buy your product. And oftentimes it's a massive discount. So if you're going to buy a product for $30, maybe give them 2 boxes of it instead, give them hat, give them swag. But if I'm going to be brutally honest with you, at the end of the day, most of the people that supported those campaigns weren't doing it for the hat. They were doing it kind of to support me and my co-founder at the time. And quite frankly, we still owe them big times. And I don't know how we'll ever do it, but those people are just kind of do it out of the generosity of their heart. Then you do a seed round. Those kind of are all over the place these days, but I would say that's kind of anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million.
Yeah.
Series A's and food and beverage are probably between $5 and $10 million. And then B, C, D, IPO, whole nine yards. So there is a general progression, but the story of True is just survive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. When did you officially start True? What year?
We incorporated the business in September of 2015 and probably didn't have an actual product to sell until 2016. And even then, that was and continues to still be a work in progress.
Yeah. So when you said, the very first one that you made tasted like tree bark, you know, how did you fix the flavor, I guess, to get it to a point where it's, you know, digestible, where people actually go in to enjoy it and get the same benefits out of it? How does that process work? How long did that take?
I guess you could say it took 7 years, but I mean, if you look at a lot of the companies who have been successful in the beverage space, their first product or prototype was not the winning product. It's the companies that continue to evolve with kind of customers' wants or desires, but then get to a point where that product fits a market and then they don't over innovate. Yeah. So that's where like big companies get themselves into trouble. But for us, I talked to a former Boston Red Sox dietitian. She was unbelievable. She met with me 3 times for free.
Wow. And
we kind of chatted about like what I wanted to do. And again, I had no connection to this woman and she was unbelievable. So step one is like, I could not believe how supportive the Boston community was, my high school, my college, between Belmont Hill, BC, Colgate, and then just local people who want to support entrepreneurs. It was unbelievable. And she was like, hey, look at a cross analysis between top brands like Gatorade, Powerade, whatever, but then look at these brands who I know and trust. And I would look at each ingredient and say, hey, like this makes sense. This provides the benefit. This does not. This has negative side effects associated with it. And we arrived at this product. We tried to avoid preservatives, whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And then we hired a flavor specialist. And I mean, she did a pretty good job with what she had. But when you throw a bunch of good for you ingredients and do not throw in any of the sugar or sweeteners or whatever, you're going to end up having a product that tastes like vitamins in a shot. And as you know, coming from the sports world, like when products like Power Bar first launched on the scene, it didn't matter if it tasted like wafers or cardboard because it provided the benefit and there's nothing to go up against. And they're first movers in the market. And I think Red Bull to a degree got away with that. But now today, like you look at protein bars and they taste like cupcakes and donuts and churros. And you look at protein powders and energy drinks, like your product has to be healthy, but also taste amazing. And that was the fine line that we've been balancing for 7 years. And I think we've finally hit it with our new launch of like our sparkling supplement line.
Okay. Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. That's cool to hear. Cause I just never know the process, especially with like the food and beverage industry. You know, like I've had IQ Bar on here, Will, like he's from Boston. I had Manny from Slate Milk on here. Right. And they just understanding the process that you guys go through, like, it's not like you just you're creating a product to sell to people for some other industry. Like people actually have to enjoy the taste of your product, which is like got to be a crazy uphill battle. And then if you want to provide the benefits too, you know, that's got to be like this. It's just insanely difficult to do.
Well, the other crazy thing is, like, you mentioned those guys, they're friends of mine, like the Boston food and beverage community. It's not that well known, but it is super tight knit. And there's a lot of smart people in that world that, quite frankly, I steal a lot of knowledge from, and they're very gracious with their time. And Will and Manny and Josh at Slate have been, I mean, some of our best advisors, quite frankly.
No way.
So the community, I mean, unofficially, like you learn pretty much the most from the people who are going through the same issues that you're going through on a daily basis. So who else is going to teach you? It's these guys.
No, that's cool. That's cool to hear that there's a community. Cause I think Will from IQ, he's like, hey, you should reach out to Manny over at Slate. Like, he'd be good to have on there. And now you know both of them well. Like, that's pretty cool to see. So as far as like the full suite of products that you sell, so you have the tablets, you have the shots, you have the drinks. And then if you want to get into that a little bit, and then also the benefits that they provide, and like, how do the ingredients in there provide those benefits? Cause people will see stuff all the time, like this will improve X, Y, and Z, but they don't really have a science degree to know if it's jibber jabber or if it's actually, you know, legitimate.
So, I mean, that was one of the biggest things I would look at, is like when you walk into a CVS or your local grocery store and you look at the back of the labels, you have no idea what half these ingredients mean, or quite frankly, I can't pronounce half the ingredients. Yeah. So one of the things that our team focused on was like, hey, let's use ingredients that consumers trust, that they know and understand, but also that are backed by basically scientific studies. And I'm no scientist, but everyone kind of has access to Google these days and being able to review ingredients and all that. So we leveraged the dietitian, we leveraged surveys of Olympians, NHL players, high school athletes, and saw like what they would want in their beverage. And it's no surprise that what they wanted in their beverage was different than what the dietitian wanted versus the everyday consumer. So it was like, how do you bridge that gap between something tasting great, looking great, feeling great, and still providing the benefit? And that's kind of how we went about it. In terms of like each product providing a different benefit, we felt like we had to be different. There's 10,000 energy drinks on shelves right now. There's Red Bull, there's Monster, there's Bang, there's Reign, there's Celsius. And then there's like 17 other brands that are vying for that space as well.
Yeah.
We're like, how are we helping the industry or promoting health and wellness by offering a copycat product? And one thing that we noticed was consumers wanted more and more out of their products, i.e. like just having caffeine was no longer enough.
Yeah.
So we looked at a lot of like Mintel reports and through our surveys realized that energy drink is an exploding category, but so is the opportunity to infuse like nootropics and adaptogens in our products so that it could appeal to, I don't know, a young working professional, pre-workouts like C4 and the like. That's a growing category. Melatonin and sleep problems, especially in today's age of technology, are bigger and bigger problems. Infused ingestible beauty is big. So we literally just kept seeing all these different opportunities and said, why not make the value proposition for consumers really fun? So rather than just choosing another flavor, we actually offer a totally different benefit. So that's why we landed on sparkling supplements being kind of a cool name for our product line. So True Sparkling Supplements is fun. And now we can actually sell in the water aisle. We can sell in the energy drink aisle. We can sell in the functional beverage aisle. So far, it's been going really well. Like all the stores that support us, we support them, and it moves really well.
Next question, I guess. So you're not just strictly online. So you're saying you're also in stores as well?
Yeah. So we, again, I can't take credit for this. We talked to Manny and Josh at Slate, and we're like, you guys seem to be crushing it. Like, what's your strategy here? And they were all about, they shared a podcast about Halo Top Ice Cream. And it was literally about gaining access to the right retail accounts who were going to have high volume, high velocity, so that you could then tell a very compelling story to investors. But also those same stores end up being brand builders to talk to other buyers, but also consumers. So a couple of the stores that we landed on was Market Basket, which is a local, absolute unbelievable chain. And they took all six SKUs right out of the gates. And that is like unbelievable for a brand with 90 something stores to give a startup that kind of real estate. And then sure enough, we had an opportunity with Wegmans, and that's another anchor account for us and most brands. They took three of our SKUs, both in singles and four packs. And then recently, the buyer doubled the facing. So we essentially have six SKUs in Market Basket, 12 in Wegmans. And our philosophy is just continue to get more and more facings within these stores so that we support them aggressively. And then we have feet on the street. One is Nicholas Blandian, who is our first hire. And then Sean McDonough, who we got from Red Bull. And then we're adding someone in Virginia. And then obviously Yash Banthia, who's my co-founder. He's the one kind of the brains behind the operation, making sure all the operations are working accordingly.
That's pretty sweet, man. So that's, you got somebody from Red Bull. Was that by design or is that just like a coincidence that somebody coming from that same sector but has some experience in the industry?
No, it was 100% by design. And I don't know if I get in trouble for saying I was trying to coach someone from Red Bull, but I don't think at this point in time they care that much that we did that. But yeah, so when we brought on Sean McDonough, we were a team of three. He was the fourth hire. And we knew we needed to bring someone on with like legitimate corporate experience from the beverage world. And when he joined, we started work at 6 a.m. because we needed to get to the stores before anyone else. And we needed to beat the traffic. And we started instituting a lot of the same things Red Bull instituted because you want to beat a $6 billion revenue business in the U.S. You can't cut corners. So, no. Yeah, that was very interesting. And that was an awesome hire.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we've gone over a lot of the challenges that you had starting out. What were some of the early successes that you had that you knew that you were onto something pretty special with True, that it was going to be a successful business?
I would say as soon as we got into Market Basket, we knew that they were a good account and we were going to know within the first month whether or not we had something. Because if you don't move at Market Basket with the amount of real estate we had, we knew we screwed up pretty big. But thankfully, Sean and Nick were hitting up those stores on basically a weekly basis and the product was flying. I don't know the data exactly, but I think there was one store, Richdale, right across the street from BC that sold like 300 cans in a month. And for a new brand, their manager was telling us that that was like rivaling some of the biggest brands in their store. And that was another point of data that we were just like, holy crap, I think we have something. But the learning we had from like 4 years prior was we got into like 500 to 1,000 stores and independent C stores with our original shot. And we got a call from the distributor being like, hey, your product's not moving. So I was like, all right, give us 1 second. We hit up like 50 to 100 stores and realized that half the product wasn't even on the shelves. Like it was still in the back room, hadn't been serviced, nothing. No, and it's not the retailer's fault. Like the guys that own these independents end up kind of doing every aspect of their store, working 18 hours a day. Like, why are they going to care about us? I wouldn't care about us.
Yeah.
We realize whenever we work with a store, we have to support the buyer. We have to support the store managers. We have to support our team so that they feel good about hitting up 15 stores a day. So it's the only way to win at beverage is you have to win at every single level in every single relationship. If one thing is broken, you will fail. There's just too much competition.
Yeah. No, it's funny you mentioned Market Basket. One, I lived in Easton for 12 years. So I was 5 minutes from the West Bridgewater Market Basket. I shopped there religiously. And then I also actually know the space pretty well. I used to own a franchise for Cape Cod and Wise Chips and Snyder's Pretzels. So, and I own the West Bridgewater Market Basket. I still own it. Somebody runs the route for me now, but in that store 7 days a week. So like, I know that space very well. The independent contractors putting stuff up, like, I know all of those guys, the Coke guys, the grocery managers, the receivers, like I know that entire industry very well. So I can relate to a lot of what you're saying with people filling the shelves and all that.
It's a battle on the grounds. Like if you're not going into that store at least once a week or once every 2 weeks, like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, they don't care. They're going to take your space.
Yeah, take your, yep.
Yeah. And you could have planograms and stuff like that. But you can name any store in the country. Those are never perfect. Like there's a way to get flex space and a way to win those battles. But that's the problem with anyone joining like food and beverage. If they don't go in with realistic goals, they end up spending heavy to go big really quick. And you end up getting into 10,000 stores, but you end up failing in 10,000 stores.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Every time we would always be next to Frito-Lay. Like anytime I noticed Frito would have like one facing that was just kind of light, I just gave it a little elbow and just kind of like put like another facing of my stuff in there. Next thing you know, you got like 2 extra feet of chips in there.
Oh, man. We used to turn around some of the cans, but then realized that's not going to develop any good karma for us. We stopped.
Yeah. That's funny, man. So first question before I get into that next one, how did you come up with the name True? Is there like, what's the meaning behind it? You know, there's no E at the end of it. It's just TRU. What's the meaning behind that? How'd you come up with it?
I mean, at the end of the day, we did run an exercise of trying to create like 400 different names. And as with any entrepreneur trying to name their business, it's like trying to name a child with a unique name like Google. And when you finally arrive at one, you immediately go into the trademark database to see if it was trademarked. And like that happened like 10 times over. Yeah. And then eventually we brought it to a designer, and one of the mock-ups we had was the True Energy one. And we were basically pitching her the other 10. And she was like, why not just call it True Energy? Like, that looks amazing. Turns out that was available in the test system, in the USPTO. So we ran with it. And the reason we love it is because it's like staying true to yourself, staying true to your goals. There's no false, crappy ingredients. It's like, I think the word takes on way more meaning than people give it credit for. And then after we launched, we realized just walking around the street, people say True probably 20 times a day. So I can't say they make the association to our brand yet, but the goal is one day that that will happen.
Yeah, no, eventually it would, right? Because you're right. People do say that word all day long. It's a very common word. So that's cool. I kind of figured that was somewhat the meaning behind it, but it's always interesting hearing how people go through the USPTO and find how many different names they have to go through before they finally find one that's available, you know?
Yeah.
So, and how have you guys gone about marketing yourself? I imagine social media is predominantly the way it is, but you're also in retail, right? So you're in supermarkets like Market Basket. What have you found to be good use of marketing versus like a bad use of marketing? Is social media really where it's at?
So I mean, the way I explain social media, and I'm not a marketing expert, I didn't come from that like corporate world, so I don't have any degree in it.
Yeah.
But my understanding of it is, hey, if you got into the Facebook marketing game 5 years ago, you probably made a killing regardless of the widget you were selling. But as with anything in the marketing world, corporate America eventually follows on once they realize what they're missing out on.
Yeah.
And then that's probably the reason why Facebook went from the cool high school, college thing to like, now you talk to a 15-year-old, they don't even have a Facebook anymore.
No.
And the way to really acquire customers, in my opinion, is kind of chase the next generation of customers on the next generation platform. And I think it quickly moved to Instagram, which I would consider like my platform. And that has kind of evolved too. Facebook obviously owns Instagram now. Those ads start getting fed by the big Nikes of the world. And then it moved to, I think Snapchat still has its moments and whatnot, but TikTok is the big one.
Yeah.
But TikTok during COVID had a lot of awareness to its platform, and it's growing at a rapid pace and continues to. But I guess to answer your question, I think the next one is the one that we need to hop on, because I feel like TikTok, to a degree, we're already late on. And we do have a presence on every single one of those platforms, and we have worked with influencers, both micro and large, and nothing in that realm has really been able to show a return on ad spend for us. And the biggest reason for that is if you're trying to drive brand awareness into a store, it's tough to track that conversion. And if you're trying to drive that awareness to our online store, shipping a 12 pack of cans down the street is like $12. So you don't have much margin there.
Yeah.
So it really ends up being, hey, we're trying to build this business, the old school mentality of like promote it, drive trial that way, do tastings, sampling, drive trial that way, and really get out in front of customers. And I know there's probably 17,000 brands that are doing it in a really innovative way, but we're an old school type of mentality brand.
No, I like it. And it's funny what you said. Like, I don't know how old you are. I'm 38. So like when I was like 20, like in those college years, that's when Facebook came out, and that was the huge thing. And then Facebook, I don't really use at all. Instagram, I'm on. And I feel too old to be on TikTok just as an individual. If I had a business, like, you got to have a presence probably you know, everywhere, but it's just interesting the different dynamics and the different generations that people grow up on. Like now I feel like Facebook's for like my parents are on Facebook and it just feels weird, you know? And now I just feel like it's like an older generation type of platform versus the other ones now. It's just funny the different iterations that platforms go through.
Yeah. And I mean, brands are built on these platforms. Every time a new platform kind of launches, a new brand will make a lot of money if they pick the right platform.
Oh, totally. Totally. So as far as COVID goes, right? So you were started before COVID, you've gotten through COVID. What kind of impact did COVID have on True specifically?
Well, it definitely wasn't a good one. I remember we were talking to a pretty substantial VC about raising, let's call it $5 million. We thought we had a good chance of getting them to join, and we ended up having something fall through on the retail front that we thought was going to make us a pretty big brand. And when that fell through, we hadn't leveraged that VC's interest against anyone else. So that happened. And then thankfully I reached out to a local group called Genesis Innovation. I had spoken to them prior. They help kind of work with you to meet investors, create the right deck, and they have their own syndicate of investors.
Yeah.
And when we started that conversation and re-engaged with them, it was like 4 weeks before COVID hit. And then COVID hit, we had just signed like the agreement, and to their credit, and I thank them still to this day, like they didn't back out despite like the markets crashing, people thinking that it ended up becoming what it was. And these guys still went out and raised like $1.5 million for us. Wow. And to be totally honest, if they didn't come out and support us the way they did and execute, quite frankly, phenomenally well, we wouldn't have made it. There's no doubt in my mind. And then COVID hit and we had a nice cushion and we recognized that investors weren't going to expect us to blow the doors off. So we had a conscious effort of not spending money. We were like, let's redesign the brand. Let's redesign the flavors. Let's take the next 12 months to make everything amazing. That way we're coming out of this stronger versus just coming out of this to survive.
Yeah.
And that's honestly when we really decided let's go full throttle on these 12 ounce cans.
Oh, and, okay.
It was the best decision that we made. So we took advantage of kind of lower expectations.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's cool to see the different type of just the ways people pivot. I didn't realize the cans were basically bred out of COVID. So that's pretty cool to see how you guys specifically pivoted through COVID. So it's been, 2015 has been 7 years. What do you see for the future of True?
I mean, we have a pretty crazy cap table of longtime friends, new friends, family, investors, a corporate venture partner. It's we finally have exactly what is needed to really compete in this crazy competitive market.
Yeah.
I think we'll put a pause on innovation for a while because I think we have a great suite of products. And now it's all about like executing phenomenally well. And we're going to continue to target great accounts that will support us and we're going to support them tenfold and continue to grow region by region and do our best to own New England and then go from there. I mean, we did just pick up a regional launch in Walmart that launches in June. And we told them straight up, we're like, we don't want to go national. Like we want to have an area where we can continue to support you guys and tell a compelling story. Future True, I mean, big dreams, but I hope just as Gatorade has become the sports drink of the world and Red Bull has become the energy drink of the world, like we want to become the functional beverage brand and we want True to be synonymous with that. So big, crazy dream, but what the hell, why not?
Go for it, man. You got to dream big. And I mean, you're a young guy, so it's not like you got to do this tomorrow, you know? That's awesome, man. That's cool to see. Do you have a favorite flavor or product that you guys specifically sell?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a big fan of the OG or True Energy drink. I mean, it's been revisioned 10,000 times, but I think we finally hit the right chord. Yeah, that orange mango, I think, does do that flavor justice. And that's the one that we pretty much get everywhere.
Okay, yeah, I'll be candid. I have not tried it yet, so I'm going to make sure I try orange mango. That'll be the first one I try.
I am going to send you some.
All right, cool. Looking forward to it. So, obviously, You work a ton, you're an entrepreneur, you're starting your own business. What are some of the few things you do outside of work?
Jeez.
Hockey, tennis?
Yeah, I mean, I used to play hockey in New York, and that's actually where we met one of our first investors. But yeah, these days I pretty much work 5.5 days a week and then totally unplug on on Sundays. And thankfully, my girlfriend, who is also an entrepreneur, runs a local brand called 1987, which is a clothing brand. So every day I get home from work, we kind of talk shop, which I really enjoy. Yeah. But then on Sundays, we try to decompress and go for a walk and do kind of the corny stuff. But that's the stuff I love away from the business.
Yeah, no, you got to. That's not corny, dude. It's like you got to do that stuff. You know, you guys each run your own businesses. You gotta be able to unplug. And it's cool that you can like kind of relate to each other when you're going through certain things or issues or good or bad within running your own business. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
It's great when you I have a high anxiety moment. She can balance me out, and quite frankly, I have a lot more of those than her. But it's definitely nice to have kind of a partner on the roller coaster ride, because before that, it's being an entrepreneur is certainly a lonely endeavor.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it is what it is, but I do love it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Do you ever think you'll 100% retire? Like if the business gets to a certain point, maybe you exit, you sell the business. Like, do you ever picture yourself 100% retiring, or do you think you always have your hand in something true or otherwise?
I mean, don't get me wrong. Making a lot of money would be nice, because I don't have a lot of it, and having a little more would be beautiful. But I don't think I'll ever be able to retire. I really love building things. I was one of those Lego kids, and it's just that's just my passion. Yeah. Making money is a nice, hopefully a nice benefit of that. But I've already kind of got my sights on some other ideas, as I know you do. So
Nice.
Yeah, it's all about the journey.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'm the same way. Like, I don't think I could ever 100% hang it up. We talked beforehand, like I do this, I got my full-time business. There's something else that's pulling at me right now that I'm going to invest some time in. So I don't think I'll ever be able to just turn it off. But yeah, I was curious to see what other people think. So Jack, last few questions before we wrap up this episode. I always ask these questions to previous guests, just trying to get the insight of a business owner. So I'd love to hear what your answers would be. The first one is, what would be the first piece of advice you would give someone who's looking to start their own business? Any business. Doesn't have to be the food and bev industry.
Oh man, there's so many cliche responses that I actually like believe.
That works.
I would say to a degree, you do have to have a passion for some aspect of your business. Like, hey, if you like operations, great. If you love fitness, great. If you like health and wellness, and being able to tie that into your business is important. And for me, it was health and wellness and building things.
Yeah.
So if you strike gold, you're going to be able to build something without passion, sure. But most entrepreneurs that I've spoken to have run into some pretty aggressively hard patches that anyone with their sound logic would quit. And the guys who like really love what they're doing could, I mean, they'll just find a way through. And I mean, I'm a cockroach for sure. It's just like, try to make me die. Like, I love what I do. So, I'd say passion is one. And then one other piece of advice would be, if you talk to someone who ends up being very beneficial to your business, don't let it end there. Continue to use them as an ally and then ask them for 3 more introductions.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't do that. They should. I.e., if someone meets with me, like, ask me for 3 introductions. Maybe I'll give you 2, but your network just doubled over that one call. So
You got to ask, man. You got to ask. I think sometimes people are too afraid to ask, but something like that, like an introduction to even to somebody to talk to, that's not an invasive thing to do. You know, you're not like you're just pitching somebody to buy your product. You're just asking for advice on how to build a business, you know? And a lot of people have gone through it. I've noticed they're very receptive to just give you 30 minutes of their time to just give you some sort of insight as to how they went about probably the same situation that you're trying to figure out now, you know?
100%.
Yeah. So second question would be, if you could tell your 18-year-old self one thing, what would you tell them?
You're probably not going to the NHL, man.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I would say don't sweat the small stuff. Ever since I was like, and my dad ironically used to tell me that a lot. And for me, I was always the guy who like, if I'm playing well or doing the right thing, I'm going to be able to take that momentum. But if I'm have a bad penalty or make a big mistake, like I'm going to end up having a string of 3 bad games. And it's because I kind of let bad things rent space in my brain. And ironically, I talked to someone about a year ago and he was like, well, if you told your 18 self that now, what would you tell yourself today? And ironically, I was having the same problems.
No way.
It was like, I was still sweating the small stuff when it related to business.
Yeah.
So it was then that I realized that a lot of people don't take their own advice. And for me, I have to have the daily conversation with myself to like say, hey, like this isn't that big of a deal. Like you need to start focusing on the big, big objectives. And if you can keep accomplishing those, the business is going to be fine.
Yeah.
So I still micromanage to a degree, but the better you at it, like separating emotions from the business and make sound judgment calls. And I think that's what makes the best CEOs. And I still have a lot of work to do in that arena.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great answer. I tend to micromanage a lot. And I recognize that. I work on it a little bit here and there. So I can totally relate. Jack, last question before we wrap up this episode of Boston's Best is everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to them. So how do you define success?
My answer would have changed. My answer has changed. If you asked me 5 years ago, I'd be selling for $1 billion. Like, I think any entrepreneur these days is like looking for like a unicorn exit. And that's the equivalent of winning a World Series or winning a Stanley Cup. But my dad sent me an article recently about a team in Sweden called Frölunda. And it was a team he happened to play for. And they were trying to get one of the best coaches in the world. And this guy had a lot of different suitors. And he asked them, like, hey, why do you want me? And Frölunda said, well, it's because we want to be the best at having our players, our managers, and our coaches grow as individuals. And from that perspective, he was like, I've never heard that answer. It's always about winning to these other coaches. And he's joined and he's followed through on that promise of kind of developing some of the greatest NHL talents in the world today for a very small country and a very small city.
Yeah.
So I've kind of tried to adopt that. Our goal to be successful is to have True be the breeding grounds of developing the best managers, employees, and partners. So if they go on to another business, it's like, no, they worked at True. They're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
So I think that would be the best definition of success for True for the next 5-10 years.
That's cool, man. That's a really good answer. That's the first time someone's ever said anything like that. So I like that a lot. Jack, thanks for coming on Boston's Best, chatting about True and just your journey in general. It's been a lot of fun having you on. So I appreciate the time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @Boston's Best_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Boston's Best Podcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.